going to stand for Iranian freedom, President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden host a Nowruz celebration at the White House.
Eideh Shoma Mubarak. For the feeling of peace, for the sun after these long nights, for women, life, and freedom.
Plus, we'll hear about a new plan by a U.S.-based Iranian opposition group to provide maximum support to the Iranian people. And later in the program, the daughter of American Robert Levinson, who went missing in Iran 16 years ago and apparently died in Iranian custody, tells us why she hopes a U.S. reward will bring progress in his case.
A lot of it sits with the FBI, and they're trying to reinvigorate interest in the reward because of the unrest in Iran right now.
From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Iran.
Good morning. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington.
And I'm Lori London. U.S. President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden hosted a celebration of Nowruz, the Iranian New Year, at the White House on Monday, marking the occasion by paying tribute to Iranian women and girls who've been protesting in the streets of Iran following the death last year of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini. The president vowed to keep the pressure on Tehran and said that while this year's holiday comes at a difficult time for many families, the start of a new year is a reminder of hope.
You know, folks, it's the start of a new year that reminds us of hope and what lies ahead from these darkest times so many have been through. And we know that this year's holiday comes at a difficult time for many families. Hope, where it's needed more than ever, is going to be coming. Hope for families in Turkey and Syria, who are grieving for the loss of far too many loved ones from that devastating earthquake. Hope for people in Afghanistan who continue to struggle with the grave humanitarian crisis. Hope for women of Iran who are fighting for their human rights and fundamental freedoms. The United States stands with those brave women and all the citizens of Iran who are inspiring the world with their conviction, and I have to emphasize their courage, their genuine courage. And together with our partners, we're going to continue to hold Iranian officials accountable for their attacks against their people.
I spoke with Ali Sajadi, managing editor of VOA's Persian service, about the holiday and how this year is different. President Joe Biden, as we just heard, hosted a big Nowruz celebration at the White House. It looked like it was something really special that hasn't been done in the White House for a long time.
Probably is the first time they have done it in White House, but Nowruz is the most important festivities by all Iranian communities, regardless of their religion or ethnicity. They celebrate this since maybe 700-800 BC, and this doesn't belong to any special ethnicity or any special religion. Everybody celebrates that, not only inside Iran, but also on the world that, for a lack of a better term I should use, maybe Persianate communities from Tajikistan and Afghanistan all the way to Kyrgyzstan and Turkey and northern Iraq and Syria and Armenia and Republic of Azerbaijan. Basically, all communities in Western Asia, they celebrate Nowruz.
What is the meaning of Nowruz?
Nowruz means, has two parts, no and ruz, means a new day. This is the first day of spring. Every day, every year, that's starting the calendar of Iranian people. So their calendar starts March 21st or 20th or 21st. Then they go based on the spring equinox. As I said, the history of it goes back for like a few thousand years ago. The celebration is mostly started with the last Wednesday of the year, which was a few days ago, and ended by the 13th day of New Year, which is people going outside their houses and celebrating the nature.
So as President Biden mentioned, this is an especially difficult year for Iran, given situation with issues regarding inflation and, of course, the protests that have really just flared up since the September 16th death in custody of a 22-year-old Iranian Kurd who'd been arrested for allegedly breaching strict dress code for women. So My question would be, is this dampening the festivities at all this year? It sounds like some Iranians are just not feeling as much in a festive mood during a normally very festive time.
Well, that's true to some degree. But historically, Iranians, especially on the last Friday of the year, which was last Friday, and the first day of Nowruz, which is today, they usually go to visit their beloved who passed away that year in the graveyards. And that also shows that how is important for them. And we have seen a lot of them today and this past Friday, people gathered in the graveyards, not just to celebrate Nowruz, but to celebrate their beloved who passed away because of the uprising. Another issue, as you mentioned, is economy. Is the inflation is unbelievable. Like the prices of necessities like food and clothing and other stuff is like 40-50% inflation people experienced in last year. And it seems that there is no end to it. That also probably impact on the celebrating Nowruz. But within the families, this is not something can be forgotten. And also, I believe that this is also one of the tools of the people fighting against the regime, because the regime does not like this festivity. They tried their best to abandon it, to, you know, put it down. But people also use Nowruz as a tool against the Islamic regime.
Interesting. So even if it's been a difficult year, this is sort of a statement in itself to celebrate this?
Exactly. This is a statement of that we are here and we are going with our culture, old culture, ancient culture, regardless of what you think.
Ali Shajadi, managing editor of VOA's Persian service. We thank you so much for telling us a little bit about this New Year celebration.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
The European Union on Monday imposed sanctions on Iran's Supreme Council of the Cultural Revolution and 8 officials, including judges, lawmakers, and clerics, accused of links to the security crackdown on protesters. The EU said it had imposed asset freezes and travel bans on the 8 officials, and it had frozen the assets of the Supreme Council of Cultural Revolution because of their involvement in serious human rights violations in Iran.
The U.S.-based Iranian opposition group National Union for Democracy in Iran has proposed a new strategy for the United States to manage long-running tensions with Tehran. Nafti says the strategy is meant to complement what the previous Trump administration called a policy of maximum pressure on Iran by also providing what the group calls maximum support to the Iranian people. The 15 proposed supportive measures include boosting moral, logistical, and financial support for Iranians who have been protesting peacefully for an end to Islamist rule. Nafti presented the strategy to an audience of Iranian-American activists, as well as researchers and journalists at a Washington hotel on March 13th, and I was there. So I took the opportunity to ask the group's policy director, Cameron Cansarinia, how the proposals came together.
It was a months-long process for our policy team. It was actually a policy that we had begun to develop before the murder of Mahsa Amini. We have always believed that U.S. policy towards Iran, and more broadly Western policy towards Iran and the Islamic Republic, should be based on this concept of maximum support. The murder of Mahsa Amini and the nationwide protests that ensued accelerated that process for us. We didn't anticipate to roll it out this early. But the process was one that our policy team led, engaging with, listening to, hosting multiple off-the-record Chatham House-style rules conversations with think tank experts from most of Washington's leading think tanks, left-leaning, right-leaning, center of the aisle, leading dissidents inside Iran, Iranian-American activists, former U.S. government officials. So it was a process that involved a lot of iteration that led to this 15-point document.
Which was presented today at your event here at the Hay Adams Hotel. What are the next steps for this ambitious agenda? How do you plan to get these things implemented?
Sure. Well, two things. One, this is You might say it's partially a checklist, but more than that, in terms of going down the list and knocking each one off, it's a strategy. It's a vision for U.S. policy. We view it in conjunction with maximum pressure on the regime as being a framework that a lot of our activities will fall under this umbrella going forward. So there will be some components which will be check the box style. One that's really on people's mind right now is the MASA Act, which is before the U.S. Congress, which has gained significant bipartisan support from some of the most conservative members of the House to some of the most progressive.
What would this act do?
The MASA Act is something that Nufti has been working on for some time, work with staffers from its very first days, and it's something that Iranian-American activists across the country have been really instrumental in getting this much support. And what it does is impose human rights sanctions on Ali Khamenei, the regime's supreme leader, and Ebrahim Raisi. And these are using consecutive executive orders from multiple administrations, Republicans and Democrats. And these executive orders have not been used thus far in relation to Ali Khamenei and Ebrahim Raisi. They've been used in relation to other regime officials, but not to the two folks who perhaps matter most right now. And so that would be a very high priority item on this. And then going beyond that, maximum support offers, it's not a piece of legislation, of course, maximum support, but it offers ideas for further pieces of legislation, which we'll be developing in the coming months as well.
Well, on that note, we heard from one of the panelists today that it might be more realistic, perhaps, to instead of ask lawmakers, administration officials to adopt an entire menu of strategies, just focus on one or two things and kind of take it step by step. So which of these various 15 measures that you proposed today do you think could be most realistically taken on board by Congress and then by the administration?
Yeah, I think the first one is the one that we just talked about, the MASA Act, which is, as we discussed, has significant bipartisan support from folks like Ro Khanna, who was the national chair of the Bernie Sanders campaign, to the gentleman who introduced it, Jim Banks, one of the most conservative members of the House, the former chair of the Republican Study Committee. That shows that there is bipartisan support for the Iranian people and for a new Iran policy. So that's on the congressional side. From the administration perspective, there are things that can increasingly be done, including listing additional members of the regime, their affiliates on SDN lists. Nufti will be unveiling something on that very soon, which I think will be a pretty historic in its nature. The first point, however, of maximum support is something that I think so many Iranians expect of the Biden administration.
Which is what?
But they doubt they're going to get it, which is a strategic realignment of U.S. policy actually coming out. We believe that the president should address the American people and also Iranians, as he has done before, as other presidents have done, and say unequivocally that the United States stands with them.
And will he do that?
I hope he does. And this is part of bringing pressure on the administration to do that, because Iranian Americans, we saw a few weeks ago in LA, some reports said close to 100,000 people in Los Angeles.
There was a big rally there.
Huge rally. We've seen similar things across Europe and Canada, and that's brought pressure on those governments. Unfortunately, up until now, we haven't seen the response that we expect and that we think that Iranians in the country deserve from the Biden administration, especially the Biden administration, who campaigned on putting human rights and democracy promotion at the center of their foreign policy.
Why haven't we seen this approach yet?
I think a lot of it is because of the special representative, Rob Malley, who has for a long time promoted the agenda that he's currently on. JCPOA, it seems, is like a religion to some folks, unfortunately, and they haven't been able to consider, or they are simply ignoring, it seems, realities on the ground. And part of maximum support, in fact, the key part, is recognizing an actor on the political stage that has for far too long been ignored, and that's the Iranian people, because it has been policy to develop an Iran policy with the Islamic Republic, and that's been the only player on the stage. We view them as the main cause of the problem, and you can't find a solution if you're only talking with the source of the problem. And so you have to be able to consider other actors. And the main one right now is the Iranian people, who are so bravely in the streets fighting for their freedom.
Well, the administration has been saying that, we're standing with the people. Various sanctions have been rolled out in recent weeks and months against alleged human rights abusers in Iran. So they seem to be saying and doing things that you would like.
Some.
What do you think of that?
Some, but not all. Everything that is given by a foreign government in support of this movement is appreciated, but we can always say there's more to do. And if we compare the Biden administration's actions to European countries or even in Canada, it's lacking significantly. One of our panelists said it today. You know, did we ever really think that we would see European countries being stronger on this issue than the American government? I'm shocked and really disappointed to say that that's still the case. Saying that you stand with Iranians is one thing, but showing an action that you do is very different, and that's where we need to get next.
What would you say to maybe some cynics of maximum support who would say, you know, if you're going to immerse the United States even more in this internal unrest and revolt inside Iran, which is very explicitly seeking regime change, then you're sort of getting the U.S. on board with regime change, which many people here in the U.S., they don't want to see necessarily the U.S. get entangled in another foreign conflict. So how do you kind of walk that line between wanting more support, but not putting U.S. explicitly in the sort of regime change lane?
Well, everything on the Iran policy should come back to the Iranian people. The Iranian people are the ones who are saying very clearly that they want to change the Islamic Republic. So it's not a matter of the U.S. saying, we're going to change your regime or your regime needs to be changed. What we suggest is that the U.S. government simply say, we support the democratic aspirations of the Iranian people, just as the United States has done in so many countries before, whether it was countries behind the Iron Curtain, whether it was supporting black South Africans under the apartheid regime. And so it's not a matter of the U.S. interfering. And one thing you'll notice in the maximum support policy, this is very different from other involvements in the Middle East that the United States has had in the past several decades. The financial investment that we're talking about is not one of U.S. taxpayer dollars. It's one of the Iranian people's own assets, assets currently controlled by the regime and frozen in foreign banks. So we're not talking about significant financial investment. We're absolutely not talking about American troops. This is very much about empowering the Iranian people and oftentimes using their own money to do it.
Cameron Kansarania, Policy Director of the National Union for Democracy in Iran, NUFDI. Thanks so much for being with us on Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you very much for having me, Michael.
Visit voanews.com and click the Iran tab at the top of the page for updates on Iran throughout the day.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Iran. I'm Michael Lippin. It's been 16 years since retired American FBI agent Robert Levinson disappeared in Iran on March 9, 2007, at the age of 58, with no conclusive word on his fate. U.S. officials said in 2020 that intelligence indicated Bob Levinson died in Iranian custody at some point in the preceding years. The State Department used this anniversary to reiterate its call on Iranian authorities to account for what happened to Levinson. Iranian authorities have denied responsibility for his disappearance and asserted that he left Iran many years ago. I spoke on the phone with Levinson's daughter, Sarah Moriarty, last Thursday and asked whether the family has learned anything new about his case since the last anniversary.
Unfortunately, we've learned absolutely nothing new. We continue to wait for new information, both from our government and from the Iranian regime. But sadly, we just have reached a sticking point where there's nothing new, no new tips coming in that are worth raising to my family. And we're just desperate for any sort of closure.
What kind of impact does that have on your family when, you know, you're waiting for any morsel of new information, but it doesn't seem to arrive?
We're tortured by it. It's awful. Every day I'm thinking of my father and reminders of him. It's been 16 years now that I haven't seen my father, but I feel like I saw him yesterday and I desperately miss him. I know all of my family misses him. And most of all, my mom misses him every single day. And she's not the same person she was 16 years ago. And it's just terrible what the regime has done to my family and to my father. And we need answers because it's inhumane what is happening to our family. I know that the Iranian people understand the love of family and that the love for a father is universal. And I just call for someone to come forward with any kind of information that can help us to either find out what happened to him or bring him home to us or just to get us some closure. And there's actually a reward through the FBI of $5 million. And through the State Department of $20 million. And so if someone isn't motivated by just helping a family, that's also hopefully some motivation.
Well, what is your assessment of how the Biden administration has been working on Bob's case in recent weeks and months? They did make a statement on the 16th anniversary noting their condemnation of Iran's refusal to resolve his case so far.
Yes, I think that they do continue to try. I think that they raise my father's case in these discussions through intermediaries. I think that the Iranian regime just refuses to acknowledge anything. They continue to say that he's not in their country, but all evidence points to the fact that he was last seen on Kish Island and his passport never showed up anywhere else. So the Iranian regime is responsible to give us those answers, and they just flat out refuse. And the State Department, from my understanding, keeps trying to push, but they get nothing. It's cruel, absolutely cruel.
The U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs, Roger Carstens, was in Qatar this week for a security forum, and he said that resolving hostage cases is a team sport that requires everyone to get involved. Do you have any sense of what kind of a team is working on Bob's case and that of the other Americans who are detained in Iran? You know, do we have U.S. authorities working with third parties, for example, to try to get some resolution here?
I'm not sure the ground level details. I do know when Roger says that, I know I've met him personally several times now. I think he's a great person, and I really believe him that he is doing everything that he can. I think that a lot of it sits with the FBI, and they're trying to reinvigorate interest in the reward because of the unrest in Iran right now. Maybe somebody both will want to come forward to help us, but also to come forward because it is a lot of money and it's a life-changing amount of money. I'm not sure exactly what on the ground is happening. I have to be honest with my dad. I don't think there's a lot of movement. We're no closer to finding him or getting any answers than we were 16 years ago.
When you mentioned that there's some effort to sort of reinvigorate the monetary rewards for information leading to, you know, resolving Bob's case, so what does that reinvigoration really involve?
I believe that they're going to be doing some sort of advertising campaign over in the region to make people aware of the reward. But I also, from my interactions for the past 16 years, know that that's not necessarily the motivation for the Iranian people. And so I just beg someone out there to help us and understand us from a family perspective. My father meant the world to me and to all of my family, and we need him home. We need justice for him. We need answers.
Well, one step that the previous Trump administration took was to sanction some Iranian individuals who were deemed responsible for Bob's disappearance. Is there any sign that, you know, these sanctions have had some effect? Do you want to see more of them? What other actions would you like to see from U.S. authorities?
I would love to see more sanctions specific to my father's hostage taking. I know that it's, again, difficult, but I think with these sanctions, not just announcing them, but finding ways to enforce them, partnering with other countries that are facing the same issues, helping to make more transparency around who is being sanctioned and what for, and also focusing those sanctions directly on this hostage taking or wrongful detention of Americans. I'd like to see it amplified, and I'd like to see them stop doing this. They took my father off the face of the earth, never to be seen from or heard from again, gave him absolutely no human rights whatsoever. And my family will never, ever be whole again. And so I would like to see justice for my father. I would like them to own up to what they did to my father. And I would like the U.S. government to hold them accountable for it and to deter them from doing this type of thing to others.
Well, Sarah Moriarty, daughter of Bob Levinson, speaking to us from New Jersey. Thanks for giving us your perspective on Flashpoint Iran, and I do hope the next time we chat with your family, some progress and Bob's case is made.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this week's show. I'm Lori London in Washington. Thanks so much for listening, and join us again next week for another Flashpoint Iran.